From civil citations for juveniles to jobs in poor neighborhoods, the interfaith group ICARE is hoping to hold local policymakers' feet to the fire. Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jessica Palumbo, in for Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect, always live on the radio, and now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, a preview of tonight's ICARE coalition meeting as faith leaders press for action from city leaders. The number to call to join this conversation is 549-2937. Then later, how students at La Villa School of the Arts are celebrating National Poetry Month, plus sports with Cole Pepper. All of that ahead. But first this morning, hundreds of faith and community leaders are expected to meet at Jacksonville's Potter's House Church tonight to press city officials about Jacksonville's crime problem, along with discussing other campaign issues like education, jobs, and mental health. The interfaith coalition ICARE is sponsoring the event. The Reverend Bruce Havens of Arlington Congregational Church is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
And the Reverend James Wiggins of St. Paul Lutheran Church is also here in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
And first, our question to callers. As local faith leaders press city and state officials to improve programs such as youth civil citations for nonviolent crimes, day centers for the city's homeless, mental health care, and more, what are your thoughts on these issues? Call us at 549-2937 with your questions and comments. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect to email us. Or you can tweet me at Jessica Pub Radio. That's Jessica P-U-B Radio. All right, gentlemen. First of all, what is ICARE? Reverend Wiggins.
Thank you, Jessica. ICARE is an interfaith coalition for action, reconciliation, and empowerment. It is a congregation-based organization that was formed in 1997. We have over 40 congregations that represent different religions, racial makeup, economic background for citizens throughout the metropolitan community of Jacksonville and Duval County. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. Our mission is to powerfully address issues throughout the city. We are not a direct service organization, but we are a direct action organization. And we really seek to hold city officials accountable so that we can make Jacksonville a more just city for all citizens.
And Reverend Havens, what is a direct action organization? What does that mean?
The best way to distinguish that is direct service might be if we were offering volunteers to tutor, or we were offering volunteers who were going to man a center for helping people who might be homeless or in need of services. What we do is we bring together thousands of people in order to address issues in the community and to present solutions that make a difference for a positive future for Jacksonville.
And a big part of that is the event that's happening tonight. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And what is that?
Tonight, we have our annual Nehemiah Assembly.
What does that mean? What is that word?
Yeah, the Nehemiah Assembly, it's a take from an Old Testament biblical action that took place in a very similar manner to what we're doing, where there was a biblical king who brought together the people to address the officials at that time because they were concerned about the treatment of others. And so we will gather tonight with over 2,000 citizens from Jacksonville. We'll have officials there who include Mayor Brown, Dr. Vitti, and others. And we'll be able to update those who gather with us about some of the things that we've been working on. And we'll just share progress about what we're doing to move forward.
All right. And let's talk about some of the things that you are specifically asking these leaders for. What are some of the issues that you're focusing on tonight, Reverend Havens?
Two of the key issues we're addressing are following up on a wealth creation, jobs-based program that we have researched and found and we are wanting to see implemented in Jacksonville. In our research and our listening process with our congregations this past year, the year before, we found out that The unemployment rate in Northwest Jacksonville is 100% higher than it is in other areas of Jacksonville. Mm. So we began research on that, and we found a model in Cleveland specifically that's been very successful. And what it does is it creates businesses that are tied in with larger businesses. So it's not just kind of a mom and pop, give money and watch something fold in a couple of months. It's based on services that are needed long term. Mm-hmm. These businesses then are created with seed money. But the exciting part of that is when employees are hired, they are not just hourly employees. They are, in a sense, co-op. They are co-owners. Mm. And so a part of their income is reinvested in that business. So they have a real, literally an investment in seeing that business succeed and doing well at work and in learning how business works. And so it really is a major win for both the community and for the individuals.
So the theory is if you give somebody literal ownership over where they work, then they will take that more seriously, maybe?
Right. They are very much, and literally, you know, I use the word invested in, seeing it succeed. So it's more than just a job. It's their business. So that's one. And then the second is the issue around restorative justice for our youth. Mm-hmm. And Jay, you want to say some more about that?
Sure.
Reverend Wiggins.
Yeah, thank you. One other quick thing about community wealth building is that whereas we are excited when a company moves to Jacksonville and they'll bring employees, that's great. Mm-hmm. But when we build community wealth, it's allowing those who live in that community to establish businesses that they own, to anchor institutions, and that makes a great difference. And then the second thing does deal with what we call restorative justice. And that's where we're really seeking to say to all officials who are involved to helping to divert youth away from activities of youth crime, especially those who are first-time misdemeanor offenders, that if we can issue civil citations, then we help to divert them from a life of crime. So we've been pushing for that, mm-hmm. and we're thankful that we've been able to get the most recent sheriff and others to be a part of helping to issue more civil citations.
Well, we're coming up here on city elections. Of course, mm-hmm. a new mayor and a new sheriff are going to be in office. Are you advocating any specific candidates in these races?
No, we're not advocating any specific candidate because we believe that whoever is in office, we want to work with that person and those who work with them to promote whether civil citations, improving life and things for homeless or mental health issues. So we just seek to work with whoever's in office.
All right, questions for Reverend Wiggins and Reverend Havens, call us at 549-2937. Now we'll go to the phones. We have a couple of calls on the line already. Bill is calling from Orange Park. Bill, you're on First Coast Connect.
Good morning. How you guys doing this morning?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good. I am work in dependency with kids, and what we find with kids that come into dependency based on their experience as young people in their home environment, sometimes the outcomes for these kids isn't particularly that great. My question is, if you're in dependency and you have to sit in a juvenile court and you take a look at these kids and you wonder, is it, what kind of home life do these kids have? You know, is it conducive to them developing as, you know, good adults, things of that nature. So my question is, why don't we look to when kids come into juvenile court, maybe the first time in a serious offense or maybe the second time in a serious offense, take a serious look at their environment, their home life, how they're doing in school, and interview the parents, see if the parents need some attention or need. Because I think that in order to correct juvenile delinquency, we have to really have intervention at an early age. And when kids come in dependency, we have a tendency to create that intervention with the home studies for the parents and psychological evaluations for kids. Kids come into juvenile court the first time around, the public defenders don't have the resources for the intervention for the psychological evaluations or even to do an investigation of the home life. I think if we place more attention on the environment of kids that come in the juvenile system, we'd have better outcomes. I'll take my answer up here. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
He raises some good issues. What I love about the restorative justice program is that it, first off, it gets those kids out of that court, jail, prison sort of pipeline that results in the kids losing a future over maybe what might be a minor issue. The other thing I love about it is it is about accountability. And so what the neighborhood accountability boards and the school accountability boards create in this restorative justice system is those young people will work with a group of peers and other adults who will then help them, you know, own up if they've done something wrong, what they've done, develop a plan for how they're going to make restitution if there's been an expense or a cost or a victim in that sense. So it's very much victim friendly. And then they create a plan to help them. Let's say that young person has anger issues. They'll create ways for them to get counseling and support in dealing with that. And the results we've heard from the youth who have been through that, some of those testimonies are just amazing about how that has changed their perception of their lives, of the community they're a part of, and of their future.
Bill hit on the issue of resources. Of course, that's always going to be a challenge, and maybe that you'll get some pushback when you're suggesting new programs. So when you're suggesting something like restorative justice, how does that compare to putting these kids in incarceration?
Yeah, one of the other exciting things about the civil citation is that when you compare the cost of processing a youth offender through civil citations, it's about $386 compared to $5,000 if we take them through the arrest process. And I would also want Bill to know that with civil citations, the parents have to be a direct part of that process. So it does involve really the community. You know, we often talk about it takes a village to raise a child. And so there are various components that do involve various groups and individuals to say, we got to surround these children so that it helps to reduce their return rate of going back into criminal activity.
Reverend Wiggins, are there places we can point to where these types of programs have been implemented where we can point to and say, look, it's working there?
Yeah, absolutely. For example, if you consider what's happening in Miami-Dade County, they've been very successful with their civil citation program. And so they've shown over the years a reduction in not only the rate of return, but also in reducing the number of arrests of juvenile first-time misdemeanor offenders.
Hmm. All right. Well, we're going on the phone again to Jay. Jay is calling from Tampa. Jay, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, I attended the assembly last year. I recently moved to Tampa, but I'm a longtime community organizer and political activist, and I just want to say that I want to ask, what is the accountability method or instrument that is going to be employed? Because the elected officials or other folks that you're trying to influence can come down and agree to do any number of things, but if support from the public or votes are not on the line, then there's really no incentive for them to stick to it. And I think we have to be realistic about the kind of pressure that can be applied.
Thank you for the question, Jay. Reverend Havens?
Jay makes a great point. And so what, again, I love about what ICARE does is we've met with these officials months in advance to develop what we're asking, what we're challenging, what we want them to do. And then, of course, the power of our people, turning out thousands of people tonight, voters, they see that. And so they know they're answering to those people and they're going to answer to them in the booth. But we then follow up. We have, part of usually each one of the questions that we ask them to say yes to is, will you meet with us by a deadline so that we can follow up to see where things are? And that's a part of what we've done with each of the issues that we've addressed.
All right. Let's talk about one of the other issues that you'll be discussing tonight, and that is a day resource center for the homeless. Reverend Wiggins, can you talk about that a bit?
Yes. One of our victories involved opening, working with the city and Mayor Brown to open a day resource center. And we're thankful that the city is now able to provide service for 150 homeless individuals three times a week. Homeless are able to go there for counseling, take showers, do laundry. There's computer access. So it really does provide a quality service for the homeless of our community.
And are you asking for additional action on that issue?
Absolutely. We really want to hold the mayor accountable and the city council to provide funding to assure that the homeless will have not only access 3 days a week, but we'd like to see the number of days increase and even the services so that the homeless, again, can have a place to go and find value and meaning so that their life can move forward in a positive direction.
All right. And again, if you have questions for these gentlemen, the number to call is 549-2937. We'll continue the conversation and take one more call here from Dave. Dave is calling from the north side. Dave, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. my main point is that unless and until we change the basic premise of the American correctional system, which is essentially based on retribution, revenge, and payback rather than correcting the problem, we're not going to ever get our hands around this. It's going to continue to get worse. So, I mean, the efforts that you're talking about in the juvenile justice system is certainly promising, but the entire justice system that we have right now is focused strictly on punishment rather than restoration.
All right, Dave, and do you have a question?
Just that was my comment.
All right, well, thank you for sharing. Thoughts?
Well, I think it's so important that we stop this, minor offense to prison pipeline. One of the things that we know, if we don't save the next generation, you know, we're going to continue to have that system in place in the prisons where, you know, they're just learning perhaps how to become worse criminals. And nobody wants that. That doesn't benefit them. It does not benefit communities, societies. I think starting with the youth is our best option because you've got the best chance of turning them around and getting them on a right course. And I think tonight's meeting is, although it's not a public forum where we're going to be taking questions and answers, mm-hmm. what we are going to be doing is pushing to see that these neighborhood accountability boards, the school accountability boards will be put in place and that those, the civil citations will be used effectively and much more widespread. They could be, much more widely used than they are right now here in Duval County.
Okay. I mean, these are really huge issues, juvenile justice, changing the criminal justice system, poverty, the economy, homelessness, really large challenges. How do you decide which of these issues you're going to tackle and how you actually can make a difference in some of these areas?
Yeah. Each year, our organization has what's called a listening process. And that listening process allows us to go to members of our organizations to say or to ask, what are your concerns in your community, in your neighborhood, and in our city? And through that listening process, we're able to prioritize those things that we should go to the city officials to challenge them to say, hey, here are the needs, or here are the things that the citizens are interested in, and not just go to them and with a request, but go to them with proven strategies that have worked in other cities so that we are able to say, here is what we believe would work, and we ask that you come on board to take out an action to make sure that the citizens are able to have a positive experience.
All right. And if you're just joining us, I am here with the Reverend James Wiggins of St. Paul Lutheran Church and the Reverend Bruce Havens of Arlington Congregational Church. They represent iCare, the group that is holding tonight's and the name of the
Nehemiah Assembly.
Nehemiah mm-hmm. Assembly, asking local leaders to listen and hopefully make some changes on these big issues that affect a lot of people in the community. Mm-hmm. And if you have questions, the number again is 549-2937. Another very large issue that affects a lot of people that you are going to be talking about is mental health care. Mm-hmm. And who would like to talk about that?
Well, one of the things that I think what we've asked is what the issue that we've seen is that for many people who do not have, let's say, the insurance or the funds or the ability to get, access to a mental health care provider right away, certainly they go and look for those social services. And sometimes that can be very frustrating. I know as a pastor, I often get calls from people who, the process of trying to find help can be just very defeating. This is an exciting alternative that we have gotten agreement from Lutheran Services to implement, which is called an open access model. Okay. And what it really guarantees, I was excited when I heard this because it took the wait list where for sometimes a person could be, you know, weeks, who knows. That day they will see a mental health professional and then they will get a follow-up treatment plan and care and follow-up appointments. So, you know, when someone's hurting, they don't want a week, they don't want to wait a week or wait a month or, you know, they need that help then. I mean, we've seen the outcome where sometimes that results in violence that's just, you know, terrible. And, you know, none of us want to see that happen.
How do you ensure that people can get seen so quickly?
This model is one that was researched again. As we said, each one of the issues, we try to do research to find where is something working. And this has actually been implemented in other communities. I'm not an expert on how the process works, but it basically helps them know how to break down that wait time and get them to the care provider.
And are there issues with funding there? Like how does that work?
One of the ways to that we found that really works well is, for example, Lutheran Services is contracted either by the state and or city to assure that those needing mental health will receive the mental health that's needed.
Okay. All right. And going back to the employee-owned business model, can we talk about some more of the specifics of what you're actually asking the city to do there?
Sure. We are asking the city to go into Northwest Jacksonville, and we've asked the mayor to do a study.
Okay.
And that feasibility study is to determine the best institutions or anchor organizations, we call them, that have long-time history in the city, who have needs themselves that they oftentimes will contract with vendors. And sometimes those vendors are from out of our county or even out of state. And we're saying to those institutions, allow local residents to establish businesses. So, for example, if you take one of our local hospitals or our university, well, they may have cleaning services that they need or laundry services that they need. Well, why not allow local citizens to establish their own business, contract with that hospital or that university, and then that way we are creating community wealth, and that's exciting.
Looking down sort of your wish list here of items you're asking local leaders for help with, what is something that you maybe see as the biggest challenge, but a challenge that you feel you're up for?
Probably one of the larger challenges would be helping our school system.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you hear the number of, you know, in the past, there were 58,000 children who were not reading at grade level or below. That's a big concern because we know if the education is not there and they don't have the ability to achieve that, well, that impacts not only their future opportunity for growth and being a productive citizen, but it also impacts the community in which we live.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're still working and pushing with our school system to determine what can we do. And we know, for example, we found, as I mentioned earlier, that in Baltimore, Maryland, City Springs Elementary there started using a curriculum called Direct Instruction. And we work with Dr. Vitti, who helped to implement direct instruction at one of our local elementary schools, Martin Luther King Elementary. And they've had success, great success. And so we believe that's a model that if used on a wider scale would help to impact the lives of children so that their future and the future of the community in which they live will be more prosperous and productive.
And again, Superintendent Nicolai Vitti will be in attendance tonight.
Yes, he will be in attendance.
All right. And Mayor Alvin Brown will be there.
Yes, Mayor Brown will be there. And also the sheriff candidates, Ken Jefferson and Mike Williams, will be present.
Okay. And again, that is tonight, 7 p.m. It's at the Potter's House, and that is 5119 Normandy Boulevard. Can the public attend?
Absolutely, and we encourage anyone who wants to be there, and it is free. There's no charge. We want everyone to come out. These are their elected officials that we're holding accountable, and as I said, although it's not an open forum, we are presenting the questions about the issues that we want addressed and the solutions we want implemented, but it's a great opportunity for the community to hear solutions that work. And again, one of the things that I love is that on each one of these issues, the solutions that we want to see implemented are more effective economically, they are less cost financially than what either is or isn't being done currently. And I think that's exciting when folks sometimes think that, you know, churches are just wanting to see money thrown around at something. Well, no, we're actually calling for a greater fiscal responsibility.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by, Reverend Bruce Havens of Arlington Congregational. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Reverend James Wiggins of St. Paul Lutheran Church. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Still to come, sports with Cole Pepper, plus students at the La Villa School of the Arts are celebrating National Poetry Month. But right now, here's how you can fund your favorites here on 89.9.
And good morning, Michelle Corum here to help you along as you make that trek to the phone to make a pledge of support during our spring pledge drive here at WJCT. You're listening to First Coast Connect, and if you could just take a moment and go to the phone, the number to dial is 353-9528. That's WJCT, 353-9528, to make your pledge of support as we ask you to fund your favorites. And First Coast Connect, certainly a program here on the First Coast, award-winning program that a lot of people listen to find out what's going on in your backyard as far as the what's happening in the news and community programs and as our guest mentioned earlier, solutions that work here in the community. And it's a great program. It's also an interactive program. You can call in as well as just sit back and listen. But it's every day at 9 o'clock, First Coast Connect. And it's a WJCT award-winning program, but it does cost, I don't have a dollar amount, but I'm sure it does cost money to put together and lots of time. So if it means something to you, maybe put a dollar amount on that and go to the phone and make a pledge of support. You can call 800-722-9528, 800-722-9528. Don't waste a minute. Go to the phone right now because, why, David? We need your...
You want a dollar amount, Michelle? How about $116,000? $811 for Morning Edition.
For Morning Edition, yes.
I can't believe you get that much.
I didn't know for First Coast Connect maybe what it might cost, but I would dare say quite a bit of money.
It does, and that's more of our in-house people, but we pay a good deal of money for these out-of-house programs like Fresh Air is $21,000.
Right.
Car Talk is $20,000. Wait, don't tell me, $17,000.
Yeah, it's not
cheap. A lot of money.
Yeah, and we have to ask you for your support to help us pay those bills because we just don't have that, and it is a listener-supported, community-supported public radio and television station. So your dollars really add up to help us pay those bills. Don't forget, if you work for an organization such as Gannett or GE Foundation Bank of America, those if you work for them, they will match whatever your contribution is. So find out. Yeah. Where can they find out where
at their
list
HR
is?
Department.
Oh, okay.
Or you can go online at WJCT.org. We do have that list of all the matching companies.
Okay.
We want to thank Naomi in St. John. Ruth in Middleburg, Luana in Jacksonville, and Deborah in Jacksonville. Thank you so much for your support. We couldn't do all this great programming without your support because it cost, as we were just saying, so much money to provide these services. Mm-hmm. And Michelle, I don't know if you know, but they raise the rates according to the population. So every time we increase the population size, our rates go up
when
because
they
we're
find
reaching
out how
more
many
people.
Are
yes,
listening.
That's
okay.
What it's based on is
right.
Our DMA.
But that's good. We want you to listen. We
absolutely.
Just want you to also remember that you can make a pledge of support to us a couple times a year. How about a sustaining monthly amount of $10 a month? That's an average pledge for us. Is
just 120 for the year.
Yeah, and that'll get you that HD radio we've been talking about. If you don't know about that, well, keep listening. We'll be telling you.
We will
you.
Tell
it's
you more
great,
about that.
Great little radio.
If you've just moved to Jacksonville, this is your public radio station now, and unfortunately, your support and your membership from where you came from did not follow you here.
Yeah,
so
right.
Now we are your new public radio station. If you're new to the area, welcome. Thank you for listening. But
absolutely.
Do give us a call now at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528. Anytime at all online at wjct.org.
Hit that support now button.
Absolutely. We want to thank everyone who's called. If you get a busy signal, call back 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or wjct.org.
Welcome back. Well, April is National Poetry Month, and the students at La Villa School of the Arts Creative Writing Program have recorded a CD to mark the occasion. La Villa teacher Cheryl Lamine joins us now. Welcome to First Coast Connect.
Good morning, Jessica. Thanks for having me.
Yes, and tell us how this all got started. These are your eighth grade students?
These are my advanced eighth grade creative writing students. Most of them I've had since their sixth grade year. We have several that have joined us within the last year, and this is their first or second year in the program.
Mm-hmm.
The reason the program is celebrating National Poetry Month is because it's a big thing for writers.
Mm-hmm.
We never really need an excuse to write, but if we've got a national holiday, that certainly doesn't hurt either. And what I wanted to do this year was actually publish an anthology of these students' works.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned out that we ended up doing it in a recorded format, so it's audio instead of print.
How did the idea for a CD come up?
Well, it was really kind of a surprise. The last few years I've been working with Alan James, who is a local spoken word poet.
Oh, okay.
And I came to know him through the Ritz Theater, which is only several blocks from the school. We usually take field trips and walk down there. So Alan hosts spoken word once a month on the first Thursday there. Several years ago, I had my students go and sit in on those events, and I even asked for some of them to practice performing at those. Some of these students actually did go to those, and so that was kind of exciting. These students, their poetry pumps are primed.
Mm-hmm.
And several years ago, I started writing poetry with them to celebrate National Poetry Month, and they would do a poem a day. And this came about because I would read on writersdigest.com, their poetry blogs, and I just decided, you know, we need to stretch our wings a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And a CD, an audio experience, is the way to do that.
It came out of that, yes. And what I did is I just asked each of those students to pick their favorite work. And Alan James actually had contacted me, and we were talking about working again together. I had had him as a guest speaker
mm-hmm.
in my class to talk to students about spoken word poetry, because so much poetry is written either to read or to hear.
Right.
And or to perform. And I wanted the students to understand that just because they're writing poetry, it doesn't always have to stay on the page. They can give voice to that. And that's one of the really special things about being in a creative writing department, because you're creating.
Well, we're going to hear one of those poems in just a moment. But first, tell us, you said one of these poems won a very prestigious award.
Yes, I've been teaching for 8 years, and this is the first time one of my students has won an award. This particular piece is called Kaleidoscope Eyes. It's about how relationships change with those that you love.
Mm.
It's a very special piece, and it was awarded a Silver Key from the Scholastic Art and Writing Competition. It's an annual national competition, so it's kind of a cool thing.
Okay, this is a national award-winning poem by La Villa Middle School 8th grader, and let's hear it.
We were blotted on with colorful paint that couldn't be erased. We smiled at our secretive adventures and cried about parting the next day. Everything felt surreal and twisted, as if looking into a kaleidoscope, our dreams and nightmares flickering like shadows, dancing around a flame, taunting it. And memories others would try and ignore, we would recreate in our minds, unlocking the key to happiness. Like when I was a waddling 2-year-old, unconscious of my language, or an independent 5-year-old falling off my bike for the first time. But then I became what you knew I was going to be, a burden. Of course you still loved me, but only because our kaleidoscope vision returned. Yours of unreal hearts and stars, and mine of black meteors hurling through the symmetrical shapes. And I found myself lost without a map. But you're everything to me. I never tell you because I'm always wrapped up in guilt and pride, but it hurts when you tell me I'm wrong or dishonest. Because although the phrase says, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, they do. But love defies every prideful saying while breaking us, making us vulnerable. But what love also defies is sin. And instead of reveling in our own pain, sorrow, and pride, we watch it unravel and erase like chalk on a chalkboard. And yes, maybe we have twisted kaleidoscope eyes, but that's better than living in the ways of the world. Because I don't want to lose you in a sea of death, depression, or anxiety. I want to be lost with you in indulgence, happiness, joy, and life. So don't lose faith, or my kaleidoscope eyes will be broken. Because you're the only thing that keeps them running.
All right, quite a heavy poem.
It is. This particular poem was written by a young lady for her stepmother, for whom she's very close. Mm. So those kind of relationships are very important. And without talking about too many personal details, she loves the stepmother very, very much. And she's just at the stage where I love what these students are able to do. They're writing about what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes as adults, we really talk about everything else except what we're going through.
Yeah.
And I love the vulnerability mm-hmm. and their willingness to write about things that are important to them.
And there's a little bit of production value to these, too. It's not just a kid reading a poem, right? There was music there in the background. So tell me about that process.
One thing I really loved about the opportunity to do this project is that it was not just going to be the audio recording of the voice.
Mm-hmm.
It also has layers, as you heard, of music and sound effects. Once the students decided which of their favorite poems that they wanted to record, then they also met with the engineer and talked about what type of sound effects they might like, what kind of music, that sort of thing. We even had one student, and one of her poems was is based at a beach for the setting.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular poet is also able to do a very convincing seagull sound. And so one of her seagull sounds is actually in the background of her poem, and it's about imaginary friends.
So for people who are interested in hearing all of this poetry by your students, where can they access it?
I would love for them to go and visit a website that we're using to distribute the CD digitally. It is available through cdbaby.com.
Okay.
And if you'll just search for Lavilla, L-A-V-I-L-L-A, it's one of the first two that come up.
All right. And is this a fundraiser for the school?
Not for the school. Basically, the funds that will be generated from this will just go back into our account so that we can continue to produce some really incredible writing projects in the future.
Okay. And it is also available in iTunes?
iTunes as well, yes.
Okay. And not all of the poems are as serious as the one we heard, right?
No, I'd like for everyone to understand. I think sometimes people with poetry, they might be a little scared. They think it's just about love and running through fields with butterflies and all rainbows and all kinds of things. But these poems range from the silly to the serious. We have a perspective piece that's written from the perspective of the FCAT scratch paper. And we have poems that were inspired by movie themes. Let's see, imaginary friends, I mentioned that, summer tubing, media, Friday nights with no plans, on up to the more serious things, the challenges that society puts on us. We also have a poem on there that is about Syrian war refugees.
Wow.
Yeah, written from the perspective of two brothers. And we got that information by reading an article in Scholastic Scope magazine. And so I wanted the students to realize, you know, you can also write poetry about current events.
Yeah.
And that particular study was pretty eye-opening for all of us.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your students' work with us. This is Cheryl Lemine, a middle school teacher at Lavilla School of the Arts. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And we will be back in a moment with sports.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Where do Jacksonville City Council candidates stand on the issues affecting your community? Meet the candidates Monday night at 6:30 and stay for City Council debates at 4 library locations. The debates are hosted by the Jacksonville Public Library Board of Trustees and the League of Women Voters of Jacksonville. WJCT's Karen Fagans and Melissa Ross will be among the moderators. Go to WJCTnews.org under Elections for more information and to find the library location for your district's candidates.
Welcome back. And finally this hour, a popular player is heading back to the NFL.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper's here now with the latest sports news.
Cole? Jessica, I have two words for you.
What are they?
Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow is back in the NFL. The former Gator and Nice High School quarterback signing with the Eagles today.
Oh, wow.
This means one of two things. It either means that the Eagles head coach Chip Kelly is truly a revolutionary NFL coach who's going to change the way the game is played in that league,
or
the Eagles are in for a huge circus that will end in disappointment.
Which is it?
Well, you know, listen, I'm on record as not being optimistic about Tebow's NFL chances, and I know that irritates a lot of Gator fans and folks who really appreciate Tim as a person, which I do as well, but there are football things and there are non-football things. And I think as far as his NFL chances, how things will go, if he plays and struggles, okay, in Philadelphia, where they booed Santa Claus, I don't think it's going to, I think it's a very difficult city to not immediately play well in.
Okay.
There are more forgiving cities in the National Football League, to be sure.
Like Jacksonville?
Like Jacksonville, although, that train has sailed, as they say. So it's just going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Now, one of the things about Chip Kelly's offense in Philadelphia is that he brought it from Oregon. It's a different kind of offense. And maybe it's the right fit for Tim. It's got to be a right fit. There's also, by the way, been just rampant rumors about the Eagles going after Marcus Mariota, the Heisman Trophy winner in the draft. They would have to move up to get that. Maybe they would trade with the Jaguars to get that pick. We'll see as it gets a little closer. So there's a lot of intrigue suddenly in the city of brotherly love.
Okay. And the Jaguars again?
Yeah, they have made some moves, signing free agent center Stefan Wisniewski, who played the last 4 years with the Raiders, figures to inherit the position the Jaguars had so much trouble filling last year after the retirement of Brad Meester. Wisniewski missed just 3 games in 4 years in Oakland. He does have good bloodlines. His father played in the NFL. His uncle was an 8-time Pro Bowl offensive lineman. He's the second signing on the offensive line this offseason, which is an area that really needed upgrading after last season. The Jaguars also restructured the contract of tight end Mercedes Lewis. This means three things. First, Lewis will indeed remain on the Jaguars roster. There'd been some talk that he might be traded or released after the Jaguars signed tight end Julius Thomas as a big free agent to deal. Second, it saves the Jaguars some salary cap space. He was set to make $8 million on the salary cap for 2015. The Jaguars don't need the space, but it certainly will help. You always can use more money, right? And apropos that we're saying this during pledge drive time.
Yes, please pledge.
The third thing is sort of what his role will be now going forward, which is, I think without a fullback on the roster, I think we'll see more two tight end sets with Lewis featured more as a blocker. He's one of the league's best blockers as well in the NFL. So I think we're going to see it go in that direction.
All right. Moving on from football to golf.
Yes. Ponte Vedra Beach's Jim Furyk won the Heritage. It's been 5 years, 100 starts since Furyk last won on tour. That was the 2010 Tour Championship. And you could see the emotion as he finished off his round with a final putt. He dropped the putt and pumped the fist before the ball even went in the hole. He was excited about the win. The Suns, meanwhile, continue their massive 20-game homestand to start the season. They've gotten off to a good start, but they lost yesterday 2-0 to Montgomery. After a 5-game winning streak, the Suns now have lost 3 straight. And they will have a 5-game set starting with the Biloxi Shuckers.
That's a great name.
Today, yeah. Oysters, I'm guessing, right?
Oysters, yeah.
And then the Sharks, on the other hand, continue their struggles. After bringing in a lot of veteran arena football players this offseason, Jacksonville started the season 0-4. They'll try to get off the schneid on Friday against Las Vegas. And we can't leave without mentioning the Armada, of course, who had a bye week this past weekend. But they're back at it Saturday in Tampa against the Rowdies. Then after that, the Armada will be back home for back-to-back home games at Community First Park at the baseball grounds against the defending champion San Antonio Scorpions on May the 2nd and against the Ottawa Fury on May the 9th. Both are expected to be sellouts after they drew 16,164 at Everbank Field for the regular season opener. It holds about half that at the baseball grounds for soccer. So going to be interesting to see if there are people hanging from the rafters on May the 2nd and May the 9th.
Did they set that record that they were going for?
They did indeed. They set two records in the opener. One was the 16,164, a new NASL modern era record. The other was they scored the fastest goal in NASL history. Just 12 seconds in, Jamal Johnson scored. Yes, 12 seconds. And set the record there. So a couple of big it went from set the record jacks to set the records jacks campaign for the Armada in that opener.
So that's going to be a hot ticket coming up in May.
Absolutely.
A couple home games there.
Yep, and it's so right now they're right in the thick of things in the early stages of the NASL season.
All right. Well, thanks, Cole. That is our program. Thanks to all of our guests and all of our callers. The show's producer is Sean Birch. The show's theme song is composed and performed by Pyotr Chefchik. And if you have any questions or comments about First Coast Connect, you can send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to catch our daily podcasts. They're up on iTunes now. Next, coming up on the Diane Rehm Show, 5 years after the BP oil disaster, some say not enough has been done to improve oil rig safety and protect the environment. The economic and environmental tolls of the worst oil spill in U.S. history, that's coming up next. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. First Coast Connect will be back at 9 tomorrow morning. Right now, here's how you can support WJCT.
Seems like dreams, like I always had, could be, should be, making me glad. Why am I blue? It's up to you to explain.
Oh, what a beautiful voice.
Thank you.
There you go. Brand new music from Barbara Streisand.
That was me singing.
Oh, it was. I'm sorry. You're listening to Michelle Corum. And that's, who's she singing with? Is that John Mayer, Sean? She's singing. This is her new duets album. I don't have the track list in front of me. Absolutely beautiful music.
It
and
is.
The reason we're playing it is this is the music you can hear on our new radio station called Relax Radio, 89.9 HD3. Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, The Beatles, The Beach
music
Boys.
The music of your life.
Elvis, The Righteous Brothers.
Yeah.
Everything you grew up with over the last 50, 60 years is on Relax Radio.
Yeah.
We're inviting you to give us a one-time pledge of $120, and you too can have your own portable HD radio. You can listen to us in practically CD quality, or you can flip it to our first sub-channel, HD2, which is classical music, HD3, Relax Radio, with Nat King Cole and all this great music. I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, here with Michelle Corum, who brings you the news every morning.
Yeah, and I'm going to bring you a phone number here.
I was just going to say, and you folks out there, here you go.
Go to the phone right now and call 353-9528. That's 353-9528 here in the 904 area code. We're having our spring pledge drive, and David's been telling you about one of the perks if you make a handsome pledge, an average pledge for around here of $120 a year. Really nice little radio, HD radio, and if you haven't heard HD, it's very crisp. It's is it digital?
It's CD quality.
CD quality,
yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
And you can get those great stations on there. It's all, I guess, you know, you get a
sub-channel,
one, two,
and you
HD,
can get everyone
two,
else's sub-channels too. Exactly. It's a radio.
That's right.
It's not just exclusive like our radio reading service. And Sean has just handed me a note because he's our best producer here. Michael Bublé singing with Streisand.
Okay. Yeah.
It had to be you. That's the kind of music we're playing. Melody Gardot, Michael Bublé, Cassandra Wilson, new music, old music, all just nice music, 24 hours a day. And news at the top of the hour, Michelle, you'll like that. So not only can you be relaxed, you can be well-informed.
Okay, so it takes
5 minutes of NPR news, every hour, 24 hours a day. So you know what's going on in your world, and when you hear all that bad news, you can forget it and listen to Relax Radio. Quick as you hear it, it can go right away.
So I think it's Relax Radio, not Relax, because that sounds tense.
All right. You slow me down. I can do that.
904-353-9528.
Or 1-800-722-9528. Or anytime at all, online at WJCT.org.
Right. You could do it that way. Go to that support button. But we're at about $11,000 now. We're trying to get to $80,000 by the end of the week. I think that'll be through Friday. So help us get off to a good start here so we can know that we are funding the programming here on our radio station, your radio station. It is your community, your world. That's why programs like First Coast Connect are so valuable, to find out what's happening, what's going on as far as events and initiatives and the newsmakers. It's all right here. It's put together for you every morning, Monday through Friday. Also, we have Weekend Edition on Saturdays and Sundays. So if you want to know what's going on news-wise, that's right here on 89.9, as well as musically-wise, and that's David's job,
We've got great music every night, from Electro Lounge to the Indie Endeavor to Country Crossroads to String Theory, Lost in the Stacks, which is everyone's favorite or least favorite program. We always get emails, and people say, what was that you were playing? And we stand behind Lost in the Stacks because it's a very eclectic show, and we love it. It's not going to please everyone, but then what does?
Neither does the news.
Exactly. So we do our best to keep really fresh and innovative music on the air.
Right. But we do care what you want and what you think. So when you make your pledge of support, you can let us know what you like to listen to news-wise or music-wise. Just let the volunteers know. Fund your favorites. It's our spring pledge drive. Whatever your program is that you like, figure out how much you use it every week, how many hours out of a week that you might spend listening to it or gravitating to the radio during or the television during that time. Fund your favorites, put a dollar amount on it, and give us a call and make a pledge of support during our spring drive.
353-9528. Well, you think I know the number by now. And fund your favorite. That means pick your favorite show. Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Performance Today, First Coast Connect, Jazz Night in America, Marketplace, Electro Lounge, or Car Talk, you name it, we've got it. We hope you will call us now at 353-9528.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.